The World Health Organization announced last Friday that data from experiments that made deadly bird flu more contagious will be published, despite U.S. concerns that the information could be used by terrorists. That decision comes after an expert panel determined that the danger posed by naturally occurring flu viruses is so great it outweighs a possible terrorist threat. Sharing information freely, the panel said, could help scientists identify a possible pandemic. The free exchange of scientific information has long been a cause for physicist Michael Neilson. In a Wall Street Journal article and in his book Reinventing Discovery, The New Era of Networked Science, he makes the argument that new online tools can make science a more collaborative process and that a more open process would dramatically speed up the rate of scientific discovery. Neilson says security concerns, like those about bird flu research falling in the wrong hands, are one of the few reasons we should think twice about sharing knowledge. But he says the majority of basic scientific information poses no such threat and should be treated as open science. When he was in our studios recently, I asked him to define what open science is.
It's just the idea that scientists have lots of knowledge locked up in their head and laboratories that could be released to the world. So things like genetic data, for example, they'll often sit on in their laboratories when it could actually be out there being analyzed by other scientists.
And you mentioned examples of this, like the Polymath Project. This was this experimental open science project in which a very difficult math problem was solved in about 6 weeks thanks to a large group of people doing it together. First, how long do you think it would have taken to solve that problem if it were a solo effort?
Nobody can know, of course, and it's difficult to speculate. Certainly, the people who were involved, which include some of the world's top mathematicians, felt that the problem was very challenging for them to attack. And one of them described the whole process as being, to the process of ordinary research, as driving is to pushing a car. So certainly he felt that something was gained.
So that six-week timeline was looked at as very quick.
Indeed, yeah.
And you mentioned some other examples. There's something called Galaxy Zoo. Tell us a bit about some of those.
Yeah, so Galaxy Zoo is this great project. They had a set of a million photographs of galaxies that had been taken by a robotic telescope. And astronomers wanted to ask all sorts of questions about this big data set. But it takes a lot of time if you're an individual to go through it. One grad student had actually spent a week classifying 50,000 of them, and he didn't want to look at another galaxy
again. He didn't
want
to do that anymore.
What actually happened was they decided, let's go out to the public. Let's ask them to do these kinds of classifications. And so they did that, and they actually got 250,000 people to do 150 million galaxy classifications. And some of those people made all sorts of interesting other scientific discoveries along the way.
So there are certainly examples where it's led to success in terms of getting science done more quickly and more successfully. But these remain the exception. Why are they the exception?
Well, if you're an individual scientist, the way you make your bread and butter, the way you make your career, is by publishing scientific papers. But if you're considering doing something like, say, sharing your laboratory data, well, you're not going to get a whole lot of credit for doing that from your peers, except in a few narrow areas of science. But it is going to take you a lot of time. Should you spend your time, you know, writing another paper, or should you spend your time, you know, sharing your data? It's a tough call to make when you're particularly a young scientist.
This reminds me of the healthcare system, where primary care doctors are often reluctant to spend too much time with patients or too much time on email and phone because they're not going to be reimbursed.
That's absolutely right. There's kind of this tragedy here that, of course, many of the individuals would like to in both cases, but they can see that it's a very tough choice for them to make.
So is the incentive system in the scientific community wrong?
That's absolutely right. And that needs to change. There needs to be some kind of incentive for people to participate in new ways of sharing knowledge online. So it's not just about writing another paper, but it's also about sharing knowledge in some of these much more new ways.
Michael Neilson, you reference in your book the case of a scientist that you know who has sequenced the entire genome of a certain species. I don't think he's sharing what that species is, but he's done it, and he's sitting on that data. How is the scientific world being deprived by not having that data out in the public?
Well, if you look at cases where it actually has been made available, the Human Genome Project is a really good example where the data is public. Of course, it's led to an amazing number of discoveries after the fact. Thousands of papers have been written based on that data. And so I think you'd like to see a lot of this publicly funded data made publicly available so a similar process of discovery can go on.
Although, is there also a risk that scientists may resist the idea of open science because it means giving their ideas away, perhaps before they've had a chance to benefit from them, be acknowledged for them, make money for them?
Well, I think that they should be giving them away, not necessarily altruistically, but because, in fact, they are getting a benefit from giving them away. If you think about what conventional scientific publication is, that really is about giving your ideas away, but at a very late stage in the discovery process. If you go back to the 16th century, 17th century, early modern science, scientists often wouldn't reveal their discoveries at all. And in fact, the early journal editors really had to twist people's arms to get them actually to reveal in papers.
You say in your book that your goal is to, and these are your words, to light an almighty fire under the scientific community. What is that fire that needs to be lit?
I just think that there needs to be a real discussion within the scientific community of what the expectations are, what they value in science. Are people going to be looked down on or ignored because they've taken the time to, say, share some code or to share some data? Or are they actually going to be properly recognized for the value that that's bringing, not just to the scientific community, but to the broader community?
Michael, is there another challenge you're up against, which is that many universities in particular are pushing to patent the work that their scientists do? They want to make money from that, not just have them sit in a lab. Does that then become a disincentive to scientists wanting to share their information earlier in the process?
Absolutely. That's an additional barrier. It's very field dependent. There's huge parts of basic science where this is not really a concern, or else it's just a minor concern. But there are some parts, say certain parts of chemistry, where the people involved really, you know, they do worry a lot about patent rights. With that said, some of the most exciting work in open science is being done, in fact, by chemists, some of whom are working completely in the open. The trick in those cases is for them to very carefully partition their work. They think very hard about which parts absolutely have to be private and which parts can actually be done in the open. And there's still a great deal that they can do that's not currently being done. So it's kind of small steps, but I think important steps.
You also write that, and again, these are your words, that we have an opportunity to change the way that knowledge is constructed. How do you think it's constructed now, and what do you think would be the better way?
I'm just talking about all the social institutions and all the practices that people have when they're getting together to make discoveries. We have, I think, a really enormous opportunity to develop new tools which completely change how people work together.
And do you think this opportunity and these tools are largely thanks to the internet?
Yeah, absolutely. It's online tools, networked science, open science.